It's that time again.
We go beyond the jive.
Join our hosts, John Swan and Natalie B.
Brave the sting of beekeeping to reap the sweet rewards.
All you Hive Jive junkies out there, this is the Hive Jive.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Hive Jive.
That's right. At least we know what show we're on because, you know, depending on the day, there's no telling. When you started to say welcome back to because it's your voice, I really expected you to say the Natural Beekeeping Corner.
I almost said that. That's why you were expecting. I almost said that.
That's why I was like, at least we know what show we're on because apparently I didn't. Hopefully you all are having a good day and you've had a good week. And we are about to dive headfirst into a subject that we have already dove into once. So if you may recall, here on Patreon, like a year ago, maybe longer, it might have been a year and a half ago, we had a discussion about EMF, electromagnetic frequencies, on bees, which was prompted by a lady kind of interjecting herself or inserting herself into one of our beekeeper chats in person one time.
Yeah.
And so we went through and talked about it. And when we were doing the research for it, we had one article that was sent to us by a listener. Natalie scoured the internet and she could only find one thing, and it was the same article. So there was not a lot of information. Well, fast forward now, that same episode was just re-released on February 9th of 2023 on the main platform for everybody to hear. So it's kind of fresh for them. And it just so happens that the latest issue of Bee Culture magazine has a two-part, one part in February and one part in March, two-part section on, again, these electromagnetic waves, frequencies, EMF, RF, all these different signals that are out there and their impact on bees. So we thought, what better experts out there who know nothing about it to jump in and talk about it anyway than us?
Our favorite hosts of the Hive Jive.
So
yeah, we don't know much, but
no,
some reading.
Yeah, and I'm going to preface this the same way that I prefaced the last episode. As I said, we're not experts in this. We don't know. We are theorizing. Take it with a grain of salt. However, a year and a half later from the first time we discussed this, there are more articles out there and there's more research being done. So now it's a little bit more informed of a conversation than it was the first time. I'm still a little wishy-washy on where I stand on it. It kind of goes back and forth on the different topics and parts, but we shall see. So you want to take it away?
Sure. So we initially had some doubts about the validity of those claims about EMF, electromagnetic fields and electromagnetic radiation were supposed to be causing some issues with all things like reproduction of bees or various insects and birds. And there was not much research, like you said. So the first part of the Bee Culture article is listing a whole bunch of information about what EMF is and what is EMR. And basically, it's associating the bulk of the exposure to those radio towers, the new ones for the 5G networks, as well as the phones that are using 5G. And it's talking about the impact, the biological impact that those can have on the physiological functions of all living organisms. So basically some kind of radiation that's not ionized, like, you know, power plant radiation from, what do you call that? What's Chernobyl again? What is it? Is
nuclear fusion.
Nuclear power plant, right? Thank you. And so, but it's saying that while it doesn't have the same properties to damage cells, basically, of organisms, it still has quite a bit of potential with non-ionized radiation, which is what the EMFs are emitting, basically.
Right.
The problem is that there's not a whole lot of research, and that's what that first article is talking about. But it is still mentioning some of the effects it has on insects, things like that Basically, it can affect neurotransmitter functions, and in and mammals, blood barriers, blood-brain barriers, morphology, cellular metabolism, and all kinds of various systems that are going on in the body. And right. for insects, it's actually affecting things like reproductive success, queen quality, drone semen quality, development, and also navigational abilities, which kind of has some consequences, because when the foragers are going out of the hive and are looking for food, they might get confused and it might take them longer to get food and they might not come back. And so the nutritional aspect of the colony is affected. And that's compounding the problems that it could create with the queens. And all that is kind of like anecdotal information.
Sorry, guys. My dog started raising Cain and barking, and I tried to hit mute, and instead I hit stop. So I stopped the recording in the middle of Natalie's sentence.
And I was like, well, I guess I'm rambling on and on. He doesn't want to hear that anymore.
I'm done. Click over. So we tried to figure out what the last part was that she said so we could try to seamlessly start that over. And obviously we didn't figure that out. So we're doing this instead.
So I think I was talking about the impact on the queens, basically, both from the actual radiations and from the nutritional problems that those radiation can cause on the overall colony.
Right. So let me interject real quick. The two-part series, the first part that came out in February in Bee Culture, focuses primarily on the navigational aspects of how these frequencies can interfere with the bees. And that's the same sort of approach that we took whenever we talked about this a year and a half ago, was those types of things. Because bees and a lot of other animals, birds and such, do navigate by kind of following the electromagnetic fields of the earth. And so any other types of frequencies and waves could potentially interfere with that. Now, one thing that I want to highlight and make sure that everybody was paying attention to when Natalie said that, yes, it has an effect on queens and this and this and this and this, but it also has an effect on the foragers, and it could inhibit their ability to be able to properly locate the food or properly return home. And that could have some detrimental effects. So keep that in mind, because that's going to come back into play later in the conversation. So anyhow, carry on.
Yes, it is. And so the other, that's kind of like neurological issues with like short-term memory loss and basically just kind of reduce memory of where to go home, basically. So, and then the other aspect of it was potentially increases aggression in the worker bees as well. So it's really, it appears there might be some really significant causes for concern when it comes to the foragers and the queens. And you have to understand that where before, when we had 2G, 3G, 4G, Wi-Fi, the ranges of frequencies used for communication, wireless communications, was not above 6 gigahertz. And with the implementation of 5G, that has jumped to a whopping 120 gigahertz, 20 times stronger than they used to be. All of a sudden, you have all those radio towers everywhere. You have all those phones that pick up the 5G. You're using those phones near the beehives. And they're even saying that it can destroy the epithelial cells of the stomach of the bees that are exposed to it, meaning it's destroying their ability to digest the food, basically. But they're also saying there's not enough studies done, and we still need a lot more. There's a big question mark in all this.
Yes, all the way through it.
Yes.
Yeah, so when you go back and you talk about these different aspects of what these radio waves and electromagnetic frequencies and radiation and stuff could potentially do, and you mentioned the ionizing versus the non-ionizing, we used to think that back in the day that it really wouldn't do anything because it could not do anything other than potentially warm the skin, and it couldn't warm the skin enough to cause any type of issues. So therefore they just kind of wrote it off. But then a lot of other studies and everything came out, and that's when they started finding out that it can actually cause all of these different cell mutations and genetic defects and things along those lines. And then you get into the aspect of the bees and you start talking about the queen viability. You know, it could have a major impact on her. She may not function as well. She may not be fully mated. She could have genetic anomalies of her own. You talk about the drones and the effect on the semen. Well, if the queen's already affected and then the drones have some sort of genetic deformity to the semen, well, now you've compounded that even more. And then that one little part that I said, remember, if the foragers aren't going out and bringing back in enough food to keep everybody well fed, that's also going to affect the queen. And that right there was one question mark where they were like, we cannot definitively say that it was the electromagnetic fields or the radio frequencies and radiation that caused the queen's issue, or if it was also lack of nutrition from being malnourished from the bees not bringing in enough food. But at the same time, if the bees aren't bringing in the food because of the radio frequencies, then it's still a side effect of, if not directly caused. But it can compound everything drastically. Now, the other thing that I will point out, and this is something that always gets me with these types of studies, when they did the research and they found out that the cells inside the stomach of the bee were being inhibited with, like, almost instantaneously when it was within contact, and then after 20 minutes of exposure, they completely died. The stomach cells died. But that was a brand new cell phone powered on high, stuck in extreme close proximity to said bee. So, yeah, she was trapped right there. She couldn't go nowhere. So she was getting a direct blast, and it fried everything. So it's the whole concept. You know, I think I've said this analogy before. It was some study that I read a really long time ago that, you know, if you eat a banana a day, it's really good for you and it has all these benefits. But if you eat 1,000 bananas a day, it's going to cause cancer and you're going to die. So everything in moderation. And so when we do these studies and we do it to the extreme, is that really a real world scenario? Yes, you've proven that it could be harmful. But at the same time, because again, I'm like a fish out of water, I'm just going to flop back and forth all over here. At the same time, if she was in close proximity and it had those types of effects on her, what is it doing when we hold it to our head and we have a 30-minute conversation on the phone with it right beside your head? So yeah, for humans, that actually does come into play. But for the bees, are they really ever in that close of proximity to that specific signal? I don't know.
And by the way, putting that phone next to your ear with all those radiation that are emitted by the phone, there's evidence that it possibly causes cancer. It's carcinogenic. So the intensity is what matters. It's like when Dr. Paracelsus was talking about poisons, it's the concentration that makes the poison, right?
That's right.
It's kind of the same principle. What struck me was that they were doing some research about the towers, basically the cell phone towers, where they were placing a beehive first at the foot of the tower, and then they were moving it. Well, first they said there was no impact. But for, you know, the angle doesn't reach the hive that's at the foot. So they ended up doing another experiment where they placed it at 100 meters, 200 meters, 500 meters, a kilometer. And the one that was closest to the tower had the most impact and was really affected by it. And the further you were going away, the less you were going. So there's definitely some kind of impact. And I think it behooves us to do more studies to kind of research that. Some of the things they were talking specifically about the queens we were mentioning, they're not as fat, they've got not as much weight to them. They don't lay eggs as well. The production of brood is impacted because of it. And then you have a decreased winter survival, probably because they don't have that, you know, weight on them. And then a lot of queen failure and losses. So, and even at the beginning, the queen cell production was impacted and they were not emerging as much. So when we think about all the commercial beekeepers that are complaining that the queens are not living but 6 months anymore, which is a lot shorter than they used to be, maybe there's something there. What I think is particularly striking is that it's probably a compounded effect between the radiations, the electromagnetic radiations or frequencies, and the exposure to pesticides and other environmental stressors. So it's that, you know, 1 + 1 = 10, right? You got that compounded effect that turns everything into a much more lethal problem when you have several of those stressors together than if you would have one or the other.
Yeah, because your body, if it's only focused on the one thing, it can do better at fighting off that one thing and keeping yourself healthy and everything. And the same is for all, you know, living life creatures out there. But at the same time, when you start compounding it with all these other things and you have a weakened immune system and then you're exposed to even more viruses and you have a nutritional deficit and you're malnourished, like eventually it overwhelms you. So if you add in exposure to radiation, on top of all of these other things, the weakened immune system and diseases and all this other stuff, then yes, it can absolutely have a detrimental impact, because it's at some point it all becomes the straw that broke the camel's back sort of scenario.
But what was funny was that potential for harm from the radiation got classified as a class 2B, like a specific class of carcinogenic products, which is the same class in which you have lead, car exhaust, which is full of toxins, dry cleaning chemicals, which are really nasty, DDT, and even methyl mercury. So, I mean, like, it's not innocuous.
That's like
pretty bad.
That's right up there with some of the top dogs. That's not even like a low level, like, well, I mean, it's classified down here with some of, like, if you stuck your head in the microwave, that might be bad. Like, that was like right. Lead poisoning, folks.
and then to the point of the concentration I was talking about, in nature, you have exposure to sun and other sources of EMFs and EMRs. Take 1 to the power of 1/1,000,000. So basically 0.00001 microwatts per square meters, right? So that's really tiny, tiny, tiny. Well, in the US, that rate, that acceptable rate, the current health guidelines are 10 million microwatts per square meters. So you got a difference of magnitude of 1 million, 10 million by 1 million. That's so humongous.
Yeah. And of course, everybody's going to max out what they can do and push it to the limit. So we're all swimming, or in the case of the bees, flying, constantly permeated in some form right. of wave, radiation, you know, you name it.
And I mean, I don't know if that's related to that, but we all know that the bees are potentially surfing the electromagnetic fields of the earth. They have some kind of magnetic, you know, receptors in their bodies, and they use that to know how fast they're going or where they're going and things like that, right? So all that is potentially interfering with their navigational system that way as well, not just on their nervous system. But I think that's a little bit terrifying. Now, conspiracy theories and all that stuff, maybe, but at the same time, I wouldn't get it past the industry to try to throw shade or red herrings left and right to camouflage what they're doing and the real impact negativity of those products, because that's what they did for the tobacco industry.
Tobacco.
and they've always done that. When there's big money at stake, the large companies are going to bury it, right? So yeah. That's also what the article was talking about. And it was raising some doubts as to, you know, how well are we informed? Why are we not doing those studies? We can't really say it's safe, basically.
Well, and that was something that you and I have discussed numerous times in various different episodes about kind of sort of the whole follow the money aspect. But the other part of that, too, is, actually, I guess it is directly related to follow the money, because if you've got a major conglomerate that stands to benefit or gain from said information or lack thereof, they can influence the research or block the research so that it doesn't get done, because all the money gets funneled into something else. So you do wind up in these scenarios where there's a lot of research that needs to be done, but there's no money out there to do it because nobody wants to focus on it, because the people that have the money don't want you to actually know the answer. They probably already know the answer, and they don't want the rest of the public to find that out.
Well, and my favorite one, and that works also with pesticides companies, especially the ones that are, you know, asking us to put pesticides in our beehives, is that some of the studies are designed by, you know, those pesticides companies, and they control a little bit the outcome. So not only are we not sure they're objective, but on top of that, maybe their narrative is aimed at a specific, you know, goal, maybe confusing the general public and saying, well, there's no conclusive study, so therefore we don't know, so therefore it's okay.
Right. Nobody has proven otherwise. Right. And so exactly. It's almost that whole, you know, you did this. Well, maybe, but you can't prove it. So did I or didn't I? Yeah, it's a real challenge for sure. And there are tons of examples where that could very easily be the case. But tobacco was a very good mention in there. The article actually goes through that, where for the longest time we were told that it was okay. They knew for a fact that it wasn't, but it was profitable for them to think otherwise. And they went so far as to even start marketing it towards children to get children hooked at a younger age with candy, cigarettes, and things like that to kind of help bring them in. And now we're a lot more aware of that, and we're working to try to get rid of that and push that back, you know, where it should be. But if you think about it, really, that's how most all of that stuff goes.
All the agricultural pesticides, the Roundup, the DDT, the, you know, all the neonicotinoids, all that stuff. It's the same playbook.
It is. And something that I think everybody should keep in mind is the literal example of a canary in a coal mine. They took the canary down in the coal mine because if there were noxious gases, the canary would die first. And you would still have enough time, even though you had the same amount of exposure, to try to get out of there before it was permanently the end. That doesn't mean that those people did not die younger than peers who did not work in the coal mines or did not develop other ailments. You know, maybe they had children that had deformities. Maybe they ended up getting cancer, but their lives were shortened from it. But it's the same scenario. So if you look at insects and you look at teeny tiny little things like that, and you look at the fact of, well, it's affecting the insects and it's killing the insects. What is it doing to us when we're the ones carrying around the receivers and transmitters for these things, you know? So I can see where conspiracy theories can very easily kick off and run from that.
Right. Well, and that LD50, right? You might not be killing the hive right now, but you don't look at the long-term consequences, the unintended consequences. You're not really keeping track of all this stuff. And to your point about the canary in the coal mine, the honeybee colonies are supposed to be that canary in the coal mine for all the native bees and the native pollinators. They're the ones that we pay attention to the most because they contribute billions to the economy. And so we've got a lot of research and observations invested in the honeybees that we're not doing for the regular bees. And so I think that paying attention to what the impact is going to matter. It's compelling to me that we're not seeing all those insect windshield deaths. You know, we used to have like a whole bunch of bugs smooshed on our windshields when we were driving around when I was a kid. I'm sure you as well.
And constantly.
That's crazy. That's not right. Something's definitely wrong.
Well, and if you think about the fact of the honeybee being the poster child, we had an episode where we talked about that as well. But if you think about it, if you do something that affects a handful of honeybees, you've weakened the colony, but you didn't necessarily kill the colony. And that's where the honeybees have the advantage. If you are a solitary bee and you come into contact with that same thing, your entire lineage is dead. There's nobody else. You don't have any other sisters who are out there working to help propagate and, you know, have your progeny go forward. If you are killed and you are a solitary bee and your job was to lay 12 eggs before you died so there could be 12 new in the next spring, and that same thing comes into contact with you and you die from it, that's it. So that's one of the reasons why they are a lot more at risk than the honeybees, because the honeybees have us out there monitoring and watching and trying to do things to not really prevent. We're really just trying to stay ahead of the curve or keep it curving at the very least. You know, we're playing catch up, but we're trying to help mitigate the impacts of things as much as we can. Nobody's really out there doing that necessarily for those native bees. And that's one of the reasons why the research does need to go into certain directions. We do need to have more information on not just the chemicals, but even things like this, the radio frequencies and the electromagnetic radiation that can be created from them, the different wavelengths of things. And that was something that they stated in the article too, is that we don't know which specific frequencies cause which specific harm and at what levels and at what concentrations and at what durations. But they're also theorizing that at some point they can start using that same type of radiation to help treat other diseases. Because if we can dial into the exact frequency, we can focus it on certain things and see what it does. So it could eventually get there, but it's not there yet. And the money and the focus does need to go into it to actually give us a more well-rounded understanding of what it is that we're looking at. And then for everybody out there, keep in mind, if it is actually having a negative impact on the bees, if it's not all just conjecture and it's not all conspiracy theories, if it is real, we're literally permeated in it ourselves.
Well, and that's where I can't stop thinking about that those episodes of Better Call Saul, where the guy, the brother, is very, he says he's allergic to those, and he's covering himself with, you know, metallic blankets, and he's got, you know, aluminum foil all over his house, and he doesn't use electricity, and he's cooking with gas or whatever. And so kind of feel like sometimes I should have that little, you know, foil hat.
I'm going to trade in my bee suit for a foil suit.
and I say that as I just got myself some Bluetooth earbuds, right?
Well, you know, I was thinking about that when we were talking about the fact of, well, if you're walking around and you put your phone up to your head, what is your phone doing? That's bad. But then at the same time, so I've got an earpiece in at the moment, but it is a wired earpiece. So it's probably not as bad as one that has a Bluetooth signal, because it's still got all the microchips in it. It's still having to send and receive wirelessly. So
some things going on in there. Yeah.
Yeah. We're all doomed.
I'm like, well, and that's why I wouldn't put for sure any kind of those. I love those measurement, those transmitting information to your apps about the weight of your hive and the
right.
humidity and the.
That's true.
But in the grand scheme of things, it's emitting a whole bunch of information, so it can transfer over to you and collect that data.
At the very least, it is either sending out Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. Yep. So that it can send the data back and forth, and the actual computer itself, probably in some form or fashion, it's generating energy. Electricity is running through it. It's touching all kinds of different metals,
all the stuff.
It is probably emitting its own type of radiation that we're not aware of. So I will tell you one thing. I do know for a fact that my cell phone is deadly to bees. And when they come into contact with it, they do die.
Really?
But that's usually because it's in the pocket of my suit and it's black, and they come up and they try to sting it, and the stinger sticks in the rubber part of the phone case.
You have a rubber thing, yes.
And since how they stung it, they died. So, but I can tell you that, you know, that it is deadly. That's a whole different reasoning though. But so I guess basically everybody, the moral of today's story is, until we know more, do not take your cell phone, put it in the hive and walk away. That's a bad idea.
No, but I have filmed inside the hive. Everybody does it, right?
Well, that's different. You're just filming for a little bit. Just don't leave it there.
Yeah.
Gotta have content for Instagram, be damned.
I know. It's like, how can you live without taking some content? It says the woman that doesn't do much social media.
We're too busy. We're too busy.
Exactly.
Yes. All right. Well, I hope that this has provided something for you to think about, and whether you are for or against, or you believe it or you don't, it's definitely something to consider. We will post a link to this second part of the article from Bee Culture. Part two.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I suppose we can do that. We can post the one from last month for part one, and we'll post the link for this month for part two. So you can get in there and read both of them, get the full concept there and kind of see what you think about it. And who knows? I mean, it might affect how you do your beekeeping. It might affect how you live your own life. There's no telling.
I probably am going to try to be more mindful about it.
Oh, be mindful. Be mindful, everybody. And watch out for what?
I don't know.
Unintended consequences. How could you not have gotten that? That's like your favorite thing.
Well, you get me there.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, we look forward to talking to you again next week with another episode about, I don't know, probably me procrastinating and stuttering at the same time.
Package of bees, you'll have plenty to talk about, and you're like last minute hive building for you.
Yeah. So there you go, everybody. We look forward to talking to you then. Yeah. That's not how that's supposed to come out.
And in the meantime, be good.
Be good. There you go, everybody. Be good, be mindful, and goodbye.
This Hive Jive production was made possible by amazing patrons like you, and we appreciate your support. To all our Hive Jive junkies out there, you truly are the bee's knees.